Thank you. Adam was home about his sophomore year in college from KU, and he said, "Have you ever had a cigar?" And I said, "No. Why?" Well, he said, "You wouldn't believe it, but cigars bring out all kinds of good discussion." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, let's have a family cigar night." Okay, none of us are smokers, or none of us have ever smoked. But starting that evening, and about once a year, when all the kids are home, we go out on the patio with a glass of wine and some cigars, and we have cigar night. Now, in the dark, on the patio, after a glass of wine, as you're smoking a cigar, the discussions are marvelous. I'm serious. I mean, we've had discussions about life-altering things over a cigar and a glass of wine, and it just kind of loosens everything up. So, if you will, take a moment to relax. We aren't having communion this morning, so there's no wine. We're not allowed to smoke in here either. But, you know, you can go with me out on the patio, and we'll have cigar night where we can just discuss anything. So the texts are available. Our phone numbers are in the bulletin, and we're just going to be very casual. Oops, I got another. So, oh, we are getting them right and left. Okay, so the first question is, certain groups like ISIS and other Islamic terrorist group want to destroy as many Christians and Western nations as possible. Jesus teaches us that all are sons of God and we are to love our neighbor. Are we to be passive and turn the other cheek in the face of aggression? And how then are we to respond as Christians to the imminent threat of terrorism and killing of innocent people at the hands of terrorists?
Yeah.
Okay, how long do we have for cigar night? All right, so Walter Wink wrote a wonderful book about civil disobedience and nonviolence. And so I would refer to his idea of what turn the other cheek really means. And what he says is that it's not turn the other cheek like let somebody beat you up, which is often how it's framed. But instead he says, if I slap Paul on the cheek, then to slap him on the other cheek, the natural way to do that would be to backhand him, right? But when you backhand someone in the ancient culture, that is an equalizing thing. You slap a servant, but you backhand someone who is your equal. So Walter Wink says that slapping someone on one cheek and they turn the other cheek means you have just now made them your equal if you hit them a second time. The only other option is to hit them with your left hand and your open palm. But the left hand in ancient culture was your dirty hand that you didn't get to use for the good things like eating. You used for the other things like going to the bathroom. And that wasn't, you know, they didn't have Purell in little bottles then. So using your left hand to hit someone was actually a bad thing about you, because nobody who was civil and nice, polite company would use their left hand for such a thing. So Walter Wink says that in doing this, Jesus was saying, if somebody hits you, give them options that they wouldn't think about. Give them the option to make you their equal, or give them the option to defile themselves. This is not a pushover proposition. This is get creative when you are involved in something that has to do with justice. Get creative and outsmart them and allow them to show what they're made of. Okay, so in terms of ISIS, I don't have the solution, obviously, or I'd be someone bigger than I am. But I do think that, of course, passive nonviolence won't work, and they're getting stronger and stronger. So it seems to me that we do have to do something in response. But if we treat them with the violence that they have treated us, it makes us no better than them. And ultimately, it's one head and another, and someone's burned to death, and someone else is burned to death. So I think we need to look seriously at creative solutions to decrease their power.
I would add to that that we do not want to get caught up in the idea of Christians versus Muslim. This is not a war of Christianity against Islam. Islam is not a monolithic faith. There are as many sects and divisions within that religion as there are almost within Christianity. So we need to be careful and know that they are abusing the Islamic faith as much as any Christian who commits terrorism in the name of Christ is doing. So.
Good added. Good addition.
I got
Go
two
ahead.
Funny ones. I have two quick funny ones. The first one, are there actually more people in the choir than the congregation today? I can answer that. No. There are 27 people in the choir, and there's about 70 out here in the congregation. The other funny one I got is just simply boxers or briefs. And so what I'm discovering at seminary is that there are some things that should be left to mystery. And this is one of those great mysterious questions.
Okay, I have another. Is the role of women different from men in progressive Christianity? In progressive Christianity, the roles of men and women are interchangeable, but that doesn't mean that we are the same. It means that we each bring uniqueness as individuals and as people who have a specific gender. And when we bring the fullness of who we have the most to contribute. And so while I am a woman, a mother, a wife, a sister, a daughter, and I wish a grandmother, my children aren't even here, and I'm telling you that. I bring those roles and that personhood with me when I am your minister, and that's a unique role that I can offer. And Paul has his own unique roles that he can offer, which is part of what makes us a good team, because we are able to embrace and express ourselves in the wholeness of who we are.
I have an interesting one, Robin, and everybody. Do you believe in spirits that can communicate after death? Are we able to talk to our loved ones? I'm assuming after death. My dad's been gone since March 20th of 2000, and he talks to me all the time in my mind. So I think in a metaphorical sense, I talk to my dearly beloved people that are gone. As far as metaphysical spirits, I don't know. You got an answer for that?
Well, you know, they call the times when we have a sense that our physical world and the spiritual world meet, they call those thin places. And I think most people of faith, whatever faith, have experienced one or more times where there was a thin place, a place where you sensed the spirit world was with you, whether an individual spirit of a person you have loved or the spirit of God. And so I think, yes, that there is some sense that we communicate or we have an extra sensory experience of those who have gone before. And I, like Paul, would say the ones that I have known and loved and have gone on in death continue to resonate in my own mind, and their voices are heard regularly.
I've got a fun one here. Somebody's asking about a story about Easter and the rabbits. I don't know if I've shared this with you. My grandmother was a Baptist preacher's wife for many, many years. And she taught Sunday school, and this is one of those legends that has come down from our family. She was a very proper little woman. Everything was perfect in her life, and she taught on the Easter story one morning, and she was trying to think of a creative way to tie in the Easter bunny and the arrival of Mary and everyone at the tomb. And so what she came up with is that the tomb was open, they discovered that it was empty, and they went off to proclaim the good news. And after they left, the Easter bunny happened to be hopping along, and he peeked in on Jesus' grave and saw he was gone, and he went on to tell the story. All that afternoon, my grandfather received phone calls from members of the church wondering why my grandmother had told the children that the Easter bunny had peed on Jesus' grave. And that's all they heard, is that the Easter bunny had peed on Jesus' grave.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Why are you getting the fun ones?
Oh, wow.
Okay. With all the contradictory and sometimes even violent actions attributed to God, how can it possibly be true when some say that all faiths worship the same God? Well, I think each of us attribute things to God as we understand God, but that doesn't necessarily define who God is. I think we as human beings often misattribute things to God, and certainly I would say the Bible has stories that I personally wouldn't espouse as God's actions, especially when entire peoples are obliterated and it's said to be in God's name. So my answer, I guess, would be that lots of actions can be attributed, but no one fully understands who God is and what God's role in our world is. Each of us have just a little piece of that. And when we add more pieces together, we can know more about God.
Someone is asking me, what has been my biggest takeaway so far from seminary? And that would be that we need to think of the first century in Palestine and Israel, not in terms of this monolithic Christianity that developed, but of many different Christianities that were developing at the time, and why this specific strand that ended up being codified and taken over by the Romans in the 300s. But that's my biggest takeaway, is that there were many different views of Jesus and his ministry, not just one.
What are your thoughts about the physical miracles attributed to Jesus in the Bible? Boy, that's a toughie. One of the things about the Gospels, if you look at them as a whole, is that the miracle stories make it clear that Jesus not only helped people with their physical ailments, but he brought them back into community with the people around them. And this was especially important in the ancient culture when someone had a disease, they were often ousted to outside the city gates and left to their own defense. And Jesus was able to bring them back into society where they had a support system, where they had a family, where they had their needs met. So I think that some of the miracles attributed to him were more that he was able to bring them back into community. But certainly he did some physical miracles as well, because even though in our modern world we don't like to think unscientifically about things, the witness about his miracle working is so large that there had to have been something about him that was physically healing.
This is a tough one that I'm about to read, and this is one
where
Robin and I probably differ a little bit, and this is one that is worthy of an entire sermon from Robin. I'll give you my take, but what is to be said about forgiveness for those who have wronged us and who haven't asked for forgiveness? My answer in my life is, if someone shows contrition and asks for forgiveness, I'm commanded to forgive them. But this is a tough question. What about someone who doesn't seek contrition and doesn't ask for forgiveness? And I'm of the mind, if they don't deserve it, who am I to forgive if they're not asking? Now, our more mature theologian will have a different answer to that.
Oh, I'm not sure. I actually have a person, at least one in my life, who did me wrong multiple times.
I said I was sorry.
And is not contrite. And what I have learned is that for him to not keep power over me, that I forgive him for myself, and it doesn't have anything to do with whether or not he asks or feels sorry. It has to do with my sanity and my choice about life, and so I forgive. But that doesn't mean I forget and make myself more vulnerable to him than I was before. It means that I am careful with him, that I know who I am and I know who he is, and I keep strong boundaries so that he doesn't have as much potential to harm me or anyone else that I love. So I forgive him for my sake, not for his. That makes sense.
I have a question.
Wait a second, it's my turn.
I forgive you. She can try to know.
Oh.
Do you believe in reincarnation, and how does Phillips address this topic? That's a great question. And I'm going to put the pause button on that because it would take too long to explain. I'd have to go into my cosmology as well as my theology to explain that. So I'm going to say maybe and weasel out of that.
You notice in the bulletin we did say that we have the right to get back to you on that. And that's a big one, so I want to get back to you on that. Okay, what is your opinion on everyone having the right to marry? Both Paul and I signed an editorial that was in the paper a couple of weeks ago with other clergy in our area saying that we believe in equality for marriage. And in fact, 1 week to the day after I had knee surgery, Paul wheeled me in a wheelchair out to the county, or to the state, no, the county courthouse, where we did a mass wedding for 14 couples who were able to marry for the first time in our state. I don't think everybody has to share that opinion, but that is based on my theology that God loves all of us, and that God created us as equals.
All I've got here is the words second coming and a question mark. I've said from the pulpit that my personal take on this is the church is the second coming, that we're living the resurrected second coming of Christ by building the kingdom of Christ now in this world. So, if you enjoy the entertainment value of the Left Behind series, I'd be happy to discuss the faults of the theology behind that. But I think we, the living church, are the second coming.
I agree.
I knew she did. That's why I was comfortable saying that.
This is a great one. 6,000 years old or 2 billion years old?
You?
He is older than me, by the way, so just so you know, 2 billion at least. Yeah. Go ahead.
What is my favorite musical to perform and why? I'll tell you, that's easy. Fiddler on the Roof. I wear one costume, I play one character, 2 hours of all that great music, and I get swept away in the story every single time. Because it's about family, it's about God, it's about tradition, and it's about moving forward. And I probably performed in over 100 different productions, or I should say probably 15 or 20 different productions, 100 different actual showings of that show, and I can step into any one of the male roles, and it would be fun to play Tevye someday.
When you're old enough.
Good.
Okay. With the prevalence of such dishonesty and violence against each other, how can one maintain faith in humanity? I think that is a choice we make, and it doesn't have to do with the actions of others, but rather the choice about how we view good and evil, how we view the gracious gift of humanity. And so I think for every bad thing one person does, there are 10 good things that people do that don't get noticed as quickly. And so if you use the perspective of looking for the good, I think you can find the gracious gift of God in all people, even when they do bad things, if that makes sense. Yeah. Oh, we have 5 more minutes. Okay. I have like 6 more real quick things. You did a series on women in the Bible some time ago. Do you have a favorite woman of the Bible or from other religious history? I think Mary Magdalene is fascinating, not just because of the story in the Bible, but because of what tradition has done to her in the church. I love Sojourner Truth. From a more modern context and what she did and how she renamed herself and repurposed her life after slavery. So that's my short answer.
I've got one here. What should you do when someone is nice to your face but mean to you behind your back? Should you say something or not? How do you respond to people who are openly mean to you? You should never be in a position where you are made to feel humiliated or unhappy, unless it's a professional situation and you want to lose your job. But you should, if you're able to confront these things, to be a person of integrity, I would simply ask that person, get them one, face to face and discuss. They may not know that you're feeling this way. They may just be behaving as they behave. And it may take a face-to-face, a one-on-one, to sit down and talk to that person. However, it's the real world and we have to deal with all kinds of people. So come see me and I'll tell you a secret that Dean Radigan told me and how to deal with difficult people. It has served me very, very well.
All right. Quick one. Cats or dogs? Yes. One of each.
Why won't the Catholic Church let me take communion?
Can I answer, or do you have one?
No, go ahead.
Okay, in the Roman Catholic Church, communion is what it says it is. It's communion with the church and the church eternal. So it has a different meaning than for Protestants, because as a Roman Catholic, when you receive communion, you are receiving communion on behalf of the Pope and the apostolic tradition, all the popes and all the church as a whole. And so if you are not a person who is Roman Catholic, you cannot participate because you are not in communion, literally, with the church. Now, whether we like that or not, that is the perspective of the Roman Catholic Church. And I will tell you that my denomination, the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, has been in conversation. Every year there is a conversation that we have from delegates from our church and the Pope and his council, and they have a conversation about making communion open. But the sticking point is that exact thing, that the understanding of what communion is not reconcilable between us. Okay, we probably have to wrap up. I have one more, do you?
Mine just says, can we do this again? This is fun. And I would say, probably.
Come on another snowy Sunday and we'll try. We didn't know it was going to snow when we planned this. If you have other questions, please let us know and we'll try to get back with you. We always want to be open, and I think this is a good, fun way to hit a lot of points. And if you disagree, that is just fine. If you want to talk about something, that is just fine. We would love to hear your comments as well. By the way, if you look it up, the text that is in the bulletin for our traditional word doesn't exist. That was not intentional. Sometimes I do that for fun, just to see if anybody's paying attention. But today it wasn't for that reason. So I chose another text from Ecclesiastes, which I want to read. Beside being wise, the teacher also taught the people knowledge, weighing and studying and arranging many proverbs. The teacher sought to find pleasing words, and he wrote words of truth plainly. The sayings of the wise are like goads, and like nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings that are given by one shepherd. Of anything beyond these, my child, beware. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Respect God, keep God's commandments, for that is the whole duty of everyone. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or not. That is the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, but not the text that doesn't exist in our bulletin. By the way, I also would like for you to save in your phones Paul's and my mobile numbers, because if you need pastoral care or something were to happen to you, or you just needed a friendly call, please feel free to call us anytime. Doesn't have to be about a question. So I hope you'll feel free to save those numbers. And now, as you're able, please stand for our choral benediction. From this time and this place, knowing that God loves you, and bring God's love to all those you meet. Amen.